Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
That's a wrap. The Joint Finance Committee reaches its last hurdle in crafting the next state budget. We break down their tax cut proposal and more. Plus, the sweeping shared revenue bill was signed into law. We explain what this means for all municipalities. And the Assembly debates bills from overhauling the alcohol industry to helping kids read. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for June 23rd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm AJ Biapour.
AJ, thank you so much for joining us on Rewind as JR is on a much needed vacation this week and there is a lot to cover in state politics. So let's just first start with the GOP tax cut plan that was widely anticipated, that has been talked about for many, many months here. And it was also inserted in the state budget yesterday as Joint Finance Committee wrapped up their work for the year. So what the income tax cuts would be, it would be about $3.5 billion in the state budget, but it also received really sharp criticism by Democrats who say it primarily benefits millionaires and billionaires. We'll get down to the tax breakdown in just a little bit. But under the plan, here's what it would do. The state's income brackets would go down from 4 brackets to 3. The top bracket would fall from 7.65% to 6.5%. Then the lowest rate would drop to 3.5% under this proposal, which Republicans say would overall reduce taxes on average about 15% or in dollar format, that's about $573 on average for all taxpayers. That is one of the things that Democrats dispute, because when we look at the breakdown a little bit, you can tell that millionaires and billionaires and those that make more do receive larger tax cuts. But we'll get into that in a second. Let's just first hear from Republicans and Democrats on this issue, and then we'll dive more into the details.
The average tax cut for each tax payer is $573 per year. This tax cut is going to be effective January 1, 2023. And the average is about 15% of a tax cut over all filers.
If at the beginning of this budget process, when we had $7 billion surplus, you told me that we would be cutting the UW system, costing over 100 people their jobs, denying people access to childcare, and denying women access to postpartum care, gutting the Office of School Safety, but giving people who make $75 million or more a $1.8 million tax cut, I would have told you that that was bonkers. But that's where we are today. It is misguided priorities entirely.
So let's take a look at the breakdown that the Wisconsin Department of Revenue actually put together to kind of put it in real terms for people at home based on what you make. So if you make roughly between $30,000 to $40,000 annually, your average tax decrease will be about $32. Then jump to people who make around $50,000 to $60,000 a year. They're at around $165 that they would pay less in taxes. And then as it goes on, the more you make, the bigger tax cut that you will receive under this Republican plan. And AJ, the argument from Republicans primarily is, well, you know, if you pay more taxes throughout the year, you should get a bigger tax cut.
Right. The argument that we heard, I believe it was Senator Strobel who made a mention during Joint Finance on Thursday, saying, look, well, if the top 15% of earners by wage amount are accounting for 85% of the total taxes that are being paid, then if you cut taxes for everyone, then a bigger share of those tax cuts are going to disproportionately go toward the highest earners because they pay a disproportionately high amount of taxes. They go on to say on the Republican side, look, the people who you're talking about here are also small businesses whose taxes are being paid through their business, through their income taxes. So these are small businesses who the numbers might look big, but they're getting a tax cut. And when you go between major big-time job creators and also small businesses, these tax cuts are in essence an investment in job creation. Democrats on the other side will say there is still, when you look at raw dollars, so much of that money is going toward the top 5-10% of earners, and you cannot reasonably convince me as a Democrat or someone who views it from, you know, through that prism, that there's any way that all this money is going to be invested and is going to be creating jobs. Really, it's a huge tax break for the wealthy. They're largely going to pocket that money, and that will not be nearly as effective as if you took that money and invested it into things like infrastructure, childcare. We heard so much about that.
Right.
Those are social programs and infrastructure. Those are the types of things that Democrats say, if you want to invest in workforce, you want to invest in talent, attraction, and retention, you put that money spread out more broadly as opposed to giving it back to the job creators and hope that they use that money to hire more people.
Right, and that's an argument that specifically you mentioned child care that we heard from Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee. They had a media avail before Joint Finance went into session basically saying, hey, all these tax cuts that the wealthy are getting, that money could have, you know, helped continue the pandemic era child care counts program. That could have kept the Office of School Safety under the Department of Justice open to help increase school safety at schools. That was kind of the overall theme that we heard. Now the big question is will the governor sign a budget with a Republican tax plan in it? Of course, there's other things in there that he doesn't like, AJ, but here's the thing is, because he has advocated for a middle income tax cut, a 10% tax cut that would primarily benefit low to middle income earners. And he put that in his budget. But as we've recapped on this show, almost all of his priorities were completely stripped out. So that is the big question ahead. And he has some big choices to make ahead of the Assembly and Senate voting on this plan next week.
Yeah, if you were to have some kind of, you know, meter, and if that meter was straight up on, maybe yes, maybe no. What happened this week in Joint Finance definitely tilted that meter, probably leaning in favor of a veto. But at the same time, that would largely be unprecedented because you look back at the history of the state since the partial veto was passed through a constitutional amendment through referendum back in 1930, took effect in 1931. There has been no full veto of a budget. So this would be an unprecedented step. It's something Governor Evers himself has threatened in past budget cycles. It's something that former Governor Scott Walker had threatened in the 2017 budget fight, but they don't actually pull the trigger on it.
Right.
But could that happen here between this tax cut plan, which is far afield from what the governor has touted, and as we're going to talk about shortly, the UW budget cuts? You add those things up, and the fact that Governor Evers has now been reelected, the fact that the Republicans are digging their heels in now that they have a near supermajority in the legislature, the ingredients are there potentially for a historic full budget veto.
Right, and we'll have to stay tuned on that. Just want to quickly recap what else the Joint Finance covered on Thursday. As like I mentioned, they completed crafting the next state budget. They also voted along party lines to increase state aid for employee compensation by about $700 million. Republicans also invested $344 million to pay a pay bump for correctional officers. And this comes as there's been a high vacancy rate across DOC. I believe it's roughly about 34%. Among prison guards and other individuals who work there. And that pay bump would increase to $33 per hour. So that is something that Evers and Republicans were able to reach an agreement on because, in a sense, too, it almost impacts, individuals who are working in the prison, but also behind bars, because less resources can make prisons and jails a little less less vulnerable. Now let's also talk about what you kind of just referenced was diversity cuts on UW campus. We've been recapping about this topic for a very long time, and it was no surprise that the Joint Finance did cut $32 million out of the UW system's budget for diversity, equity, inclusion, because Assembly Speaker Robin Voss indicated this a week ago. He also wanted even deeper cuts, but it appears Senate Republicans didn't want to go that far. So the move now sets a potential showdown with Governor Evers, like we mentioned, who threatened to veto the budget if those cuts were included. Let's take a listen from Democrats and Republicans on this topic, specifically Democrats arguing that this is a mistake, this is a bad idea for the world that we live in. Meanwhile, Republicans are saying, hey, this is money that should be reinvested into the workforce and focus on things that they should be taught in classrooms, not DEI. Let's take a listen.
You are making a mistake by targeting this. But if you vote for this garbage right here, right now, if you fire 188 Wisconsinites simply because they took a job and care about diverse populations, Robin Voss wins.
I have faith in our citizenry. I don't think they're these raving racists that until they come to the hallowed grounds of UW-Madison or whatever four-year campus, that they will straighten them out. They will make them good human beings. I just got more faith in our citizenry that that's really not what, you know, they need or what they're actually looking for.
We also know with the $32 million in cuts, Joint Finance says that will roughly be about 188 positions that those individuals could very likely lose their jobs. And what we found out about how they calculated those positions is if in their title had anything, including the words diversity, equity, inclusion programs. This comes also after we heard UW System President Jay Rothman on Monday testify to the University and College Committee, basically warning them if these cuts go through, we could possibly see campus closures. We could also see tuition hikes, which is something I think with inflation he's been warning about for some time. But that is going to be looking ahead what could possibly happen under these cuts. Also, in order to get this money back, Republicans are giving him a chance to come to the committee. He would have to present a plan of how he would reinvest those dollars into expanding the workforce. And expanding the workforce right now has been a constant struggle, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country.
Yeah, these, you know, DEI employees, they're a group of the state workforce that is viewed very differently by the two parties. Broadly, going back to the point about the correctional officers, that's one area where there's a bipartisan agreement, where everyone agrees that there's a need to retain the correctional officers. The Wisconsin Policy Forum had just put out a report not that long ago saying, look, kind of sounding an alarm bell, we are seeing record numbers of departures from the workforce. So both parties recognize we've got to do something to attract and keep workers in the public sector. So broadly, there's that agreement, certainly that acute need for correctional officers. Very different view here with UW. And the response from Democrats, the faculty organization was on social media following the vote Thursday night saying, look, well, if Republicans are going to say, quit focusing so much on these social justice matters and opening offices, creating positions for diversity, equity, inclusion, focus on preparing the next generation of Wisconsin workers, builders, job creators. Well, the faculty organization says, look, if you really believe that, then why did you cut out the UW System's top capital building project request, a new engineering building on the Madison campus? The, you know, from System President Rothman down, people throughout UW have said that's a huge priority. If you build this engineering, this new engineering building, that will help foster a new generation of job creators, of workers making a healthy wage. So if you really mean it, quite literally, put your money where your mouth is and build that engineering building. That's the response from Democrats. For Republicans, of course, they obviously view that as non-essential, and they're drawing a line here on DEI. They're saying, yeah, look, it might just be half of 1%, less than half of 1% of the UW System budget, but that's money that is spent elsewhere. In their minds, essentially, as you've noted in your report, Emily, they view it as, frankly, a waste of money.
Right. That was Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who says these dollars should not be used, or taxpayer dollars should not be used for this. He calls DEI divisive. And at the state GOP convention, he called it the most important issue at this time. It comes as we also seen other states across the country target DEI offices on college campuses. So this is not just unique to Wisconsin at all. So that is now looking ahead. Is this going to frustrate Governor Evers to the point where he vetoes the entire budget?
And he has said on the record he would veto the budget if it included these cuts to UW. So he's drawn a line. It'll be interesting to see if indeed when push comes to shove that line's real.
Right. All right. Moving away from the budget, there was also another big story this week, which deals with shared revenue. We've talked about it, what it means for municipalities across the state, but there's also a key portion that targets Milwaukee. Before we get to the Milwaukee aspect, what we're talking about is Governor Evers finally signing this massive multi-million dollar bill into law, which would give a minimum of 20% of state aid to local municipalities for things like fire, police, EMS, parks, libraries, a whole host of services. And they haven't had a boost in state aid. This is called shared revenue in decades. So this is a lifeline that many of them wanted. The other portion of this bill would give Milwaukee the chance to not fall into bankruptcy because it would allow the county and the city to raise a new sales tax. Also, on the same day that Evers signed this bill publicly in Wausau, he quietly signed an education bill, which was part of this agreement that he made with GOP leaders that would increase aid for public and private schools. Let's take a listen to Senator LaTanya Johnson, who was at that event in Wausau. And important to note that Republicans and Democrats were joined by the Evers at this bill signing ceremony. She's talking about specifically about how much this will save Milwaukee. Meanwhile, Evers addressed frustrations from public school advocates who are very close with him, as he was the former state superintendent. They were really upset about how he gave more per pupil aid to private voucher schools. Let's take a listen on how they both responded to that.
This shared revenue bill means absolutely everything to the city of Milwaukee. For some individuals, this was just a bill. But for the individuals in the city of Milwaukee who are on the verge of insolvency, this means an opportunity to start over.
What people forget is every time we have a budget for public schools, our money for charters or for vouchers goes up too. But the idea that somehow voucher schools and independent charters haven't been receiving money and all of a sudden they are this time, that's just not true. I understand people's concern about that, but I thought a small bump for those schools was a way to get to go.
So now looking ahead, AJ, you had some reporting this week because you are at city council talking to county leaders as well. Looking ahead, we now know that the Milwaukee Common Council is exploring options to pursue legal action specifically to the provisions that target Milwaukee. We're talking about the ones about DEI. There's other ones in there that they would have to maintain the certain amount of police and fire or they can lose funding. Tell me just a little bit more about who you talked to and where does this go looking forward?
Yeah, this does not sit well with Republican leadership who feel, in essence, that this is a double cross or bad faith move where after months of negotiations with Mayor Cavalier Johnson, the Milwaukee Common Council responds by saying, look, we're going to take this vote on July 11th. Our intention is to pass it. They need two-thirds. You've had seven of the alders put out a statement calling this bill and the provisions that are specific to Milwaukee, and it, quote, overreaching and frankly racist. Now, I've gone on record as saying that I will puree my notepad into a pasta sauce if all seven of those alders actually vote no when the vote's in front of them, and they have to either right. choose this 2% sales tax that would be introduced or potentially set the city up for having to cut its budget by 25% in 2 years. Nevertheless, to use a term that we've heard from pretty much everybody in this city over the last few months, there's a lot of heartburn at Milwaukee City Hall over the provisions in this bill. You can't fund any DEI positions. You cannot use any tax revenue, either this new sales tax or the property taxes that you're levied. No tax revenue can go toward the streetcar, not expanding it, not operating it, basically boxing in the hop, if you will. You have to have a certain number of police and fire staffing over the course of the next 10 years. Some city leaders feel like, well, you're putting us in a situation where we'll be constrained down the road because that's a condition that we'll have to meet. The school resource officers have to be returned to Milwaukee Public Schools after they were removed in the summer of 2020. There's a sense that this is micromanaging. So what this lawsuit is would potentially argue is it's unfair. I'm no attorney, but the folks I've talked to have said, look, there's a potential legal challenge here in that the home rule provision, albeit one that has been weakened over the last several years by legislative action and rulings by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, well, it now might be a whole new ballgame once Justice-elect Protasiewicz is sworn in and gives liberals a 4-3 majority on the court. Suddenly, you can revisit some of these, quote, you know, home rule statute decisions, specifically in this case, because this is not a uniform set of provisions. There are specific items unique to the state's only first-class city, Milwaukee. The question that I would be interested in posing is, if indeed this does go down the road and there is a lawsuit filed, is it going to specifically challenge this law? Are they going to say, these Milwaukee provisions, these are illegal, they're unconstitutional, they got to go? Or are they going to go for the whole enchilada and say, essentially, even the concept of Milwaukee being a first-class city and legislation that is specific to first-class cities, that is unconstitutional because that is not applied uniformly across the rest of the state. Think the residency requirement that in 2016 was struck down when Milwaukee could no longer require its city workers to also live in the city. So there's a sense that there's going to be legal action. One, how far does that challenge go? What happens to that challenge? And beyond that, and I'm sure that in the mayor's office, they are walking an absolute tightrope because they don't want to alienate their common council. But they've also just spent weeks out here trying to work with legislative leaders, lobbying. And Speaker Voss basically said, if you guys take this money and then turn around and sue us, we feel like we've been double-crossed, and that's going to harm our relationship going forward. So there are a ton of dynamics at play specific to Milwaukee, but then you focus so much on that, and you can lose sight of the fact that every local community in the state is getting a funding increase, some much bigger than others. The way this formula seems to work when you look at what everyone's getting in terms of an aid increase, the smaller communities are getting really big bumps. You're talking about some small towns and villages looking at 300-400% increases because they weren't getting a lot of money up front. The group that seems to be kind of lost in all of this are your mid-sized cities, your Kenoshas, your Janesvilles, your Eau Claires, because they're getting an increase in terms of percentage comparable to like your Milwaukees and Madisons, like, you know, a 10-20% increase. So in raw dollars, it's not a ton more. So if I'm those places, I almost feel like we didn't quite get our share in this. But as the League of Wisconsin Municipalities told me when I talked to Jerry DeShane this week, at the end of the day, there's going to be more money for everyone. Are there going to be some who feel like, well, why did they get so much more and we didn't? That's always going to be the case. There's no way to not have that in this bill. But there was bipartisan agreement. The governor has signed it. Everybody will get more money, but then you just circle back to Milwaukee. That's going to be a legal fight.
It's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of municipalities, too. And, of course, everyone wants a little bit more. But also, all municipalities are still going to have to follow some strict guidelines as well. They're going to have to maintain certain quotas with fire and police. They're also not going to be allowed to have local public health officers shut down a business for more than 30 days to combat, you know, like COVID or some other disease spread. Also, just want to note, too, because CBS 58 grabbed the mayor and was one of the first to ask him, hey, do you support this lawsuit? Do you want to see this go forth? He was very careful in his response, but he suggested if there are ways, if there is an avenue to challenge these Milwaukee provisions, he'd support it. And that's what kind of set off Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, like you said.
And then seemingly recognizing that, the mayor kind of walked that back a little bit on Thursday because he was asked about it again, like, so yes or no, do you support this lawsuit? And it was just a very vague answer to the effect of, we're just working through things. We're just working through it. You know, the mayor said from the beginning, we don't like these Milwaukee provisions. But whereas on Wednesday, he gave a somewhat strong response in that, if there's a way to get this stuff out, I think we should get it out. To then pin down again, like, so you're saying you support this lawsuit?
Yeah.
And he really, really, really tried to stay on that tightrope.
Quickly after Robin Voss said, well, if you want to sour our relationship, this will do it. So he might have changed his tone after hearing that. Also just want to hit, too, on the timeline of a possible lawsuit, because we know come August 1st, Liberal incoming Justice Janet Protasiewicz will be sworn to the bench. So that could give maybe Democrats a little bit more ease that whatever possible challenge, if it makes it up to the high court, that it could possibly rule in their favor. All right, let's now recap. Assembly was in session this week, too, and they had quite a few bills, some that were controversial and some that got bipartisan support. Let's start one that Democrats and Republicans voted for, which is a sweeping bill that would overhaul the alcohol industry by changing the way it's distributed, sold and regulated at wedding barn venues. Some of the provisions to highlight, they include breweries could sell beers produced outside of Wisconsin. Currently, that's not allowed under state law. It would extend the closing time for wineries where they could stay open until not even until midnight, excuse me. And then bars during the Republican National Convention can stay open until 4 a.m. in a wide variety of counties surrounding Milwaukee. Now, there's a lot of people that celebrated this bill because, in a sense, this was years in the making. I mean, there was all sides from, you know, the alcohol industry. We saw Governor Evers part of these negotiations. The bill was sponsored by Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu. This has been a long time coming, but I think the sticking point was primarily wedding barn owners, specifically in rural areas, who were really frustrated because of, in the bill, either they would have to get a liquor license, or if they don't want to, they could only operate 6 days a year. And the big question, right, is, for someone who's getting married at a wedding barn too, you're worried about, is your date going to happen for the brides, right? And that was the concern, and how much loss in revenue they would make. So I talked to some wedding barn owners about that concern, and it appeared that if that's just the one little caveat, Republicans and Democrats say, I think, you know, it's not, they don't want to say there's winners and losers, but overall, there was more people that were supportive of this plan, and they didn't feel like they were singling them out because they still have an option to get a liquor license. On the other hand, you talk to brew makers and brew pubs who are really excited about these options.
Well, the Tavern League of Wisconsin had said that the wedding barn provision was their top priority. And as we know in the state, if the Tavern League of Wisconsin has a grave concern, typically there's no shortage of lawmakers who will listen to those concerns. So that was a significant part of this bill, and the wedding barn operators are saying, look, you can't say that everybody won here because we didn't win. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, they have a tough decision to make. Either get the liquor license now or you're confined to those 6 days a year. But beyond that, breweries, I talked to Lakefront Brewery and was in Milwaukee. They're excited about the fact that they're not as constrained in what they can make. They can make a whole new product line now. It's one of those things where you don't really think about it until you talk to someone like a brewery, and they can say, you know, that we were prohibited from making canned cocktails. We could not produce canned rum and cokes or vodka lemonade.
Those are so popular now.
They are.
And
you see all the massive macro breweries and macro distilleries are doing it. Now your lakefront breweries of the world can start making those. So they're happy about that. Also, one of those little-known things that you look around and say, really, that was a law because this was so antiquated, was that those breweries could not have tap options from an out-of-state brewery. That was illegal. And Lakefront again said that put us in a weird spot where we do a collab with a Cleveland brewery, and if we go there 1 year and make the collaboration beer there, we can't sell it in our own brewery.
Right.
So a lot of modernization happening here with a little sweetener for the RNC as well, which of course came up a couple years ago, didn't get across the finish line. Now, there you have it.
4 a.m. It'll be very late, as we're probably both going to be covering that event. All right. Now, other things I just want to highlight that the Assembly passed. This has been a bill that we talked about the show. It's a $50 million literacy bill. It did pass with bipartisan support after some Democrats were pretty frustrated how it was rushed through the process, but there were some changes added to it. So it would adopt a new way of teaching kids to read. It would basically sound out words, kind of like if other people from out of states are familiar with Hooked on Phonics. That currently is not taught in schools. They want to put that in schools to improve literacy scores. And it underwent some changes, like I mentioned, because Governor Evers was unhappy about it. The State Department of Public Instruction was unhappy about it because of a provision in the bill that is called a retention policy that would have held back third graders from advancing to the fourth grade unless they, if they did not score sufficient on reading scores. That provision was taken out. That was tweaked. And then that's how we got to this agreement. But how I started this topic, I want to go back to, because Democrats wanted a lot more in this bill. But as you heard from Representative Joel Kitchens, he called this, months in the making. This is the most work that he's put into a bill. And it's not perfect, but it's getting to a point to at least get something through the legislature to adjust reading scores. So let's take a listen to both sides on this.
There is no one-size approach to reading and literacy. There are too many unanswered questions, and perhaps if we had been a part of the process, we would know the answers. But due to the rush nature of this bill, we do not have them. People and communities do not like it when something is done to them. If you want to have them on your side, you bring them in.
I met with the governor, and the governor told me, negotiate with DPI on my behalf. This is the most important thing I've ever worked on, but it's also the most difficult. Trying to get everybody on the same page in our caucus and negotiating with DPI has been extremely difficult. If I had tried to include more people into it, I wouldn't be here today. This is not something that was rushed through, thrown together, that needs more time. More time kills this bill.
So with this reading bill too, AJ, it does impact across the board, all school districts. But I know it's especially important to kids in Milwaukee Public Schools because they do test some of the lowest in the entire state.
Yeah, if you look at the numbers, something had to change. Wisconsin's reading scores have been on a downward trajectory that goes back well before the COVID pandemic. Going back decades, Wisconsin has the biggest racial gap in student achievement, reading folded into that. So everyone can agree, something really had to change here. Now, the third grade retention policy, my mother-in-law is a retired first grade teacher. She thought that language was horrific. So a lot of people in the education world feel like you cannot retain third graders because they perform poorly on a single reading exam. The DPI got through to Representative Kitchens. That's changed. The question now is, were those compromises between Republicans and the DPI going to be enough to get Governor Evers' signature? You know, as the former state superintendent, he's passionate about this. He acknowledges there's a problem. Is there enough there for everybody for him to sign it? That'll be something that's interesting to see.
Right. And real quickly, looking ahead to next week, we also learned from Speaker Voss this week that they have not reached a consensus on a Brewers package. And what I mean by that is allocating more money to the team to have the team extend their lease in Milwaukee. And this just comes after, you know, the MLB commissioner was in Milwaukee last month begging lawmakers to act quickly on this. But Voss said we haven't reached a deal. It doesn't look like we're going to get it by the 4th of July, which he originally said last week is his goal. So now we could be looking at going into a special session this summer after lawmakers wrap up the state budget. So still plenty of stuff to talk about in the weeks ahead. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
I'm AJ Bhaipur. It's been a pleasure filling in for JR this week.
Well, and thank you for having you on the show. I appreciate it. We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.